Coming up very shortly, we've got some live music from Mairead Ní Uaoine. She's going to be accompanied by Kieran Corran. We're talking about an event that's coming up, all very exciting, so stay tuned for that. Always a treat to talk to Mairead, especially when we get to hear her perform as well. Talking to the Paul and Grace about the Women's Rugby Club, by the way, they are also looking for a sponsor. So there is an opportunity for a local business there to, I suppose, get in early on something that could be really, really big. So I presume you can just contact Letterkenny Rugby Club if you would like to back the women there, back Paul, back the club and be part of something potentially really special. I think it's going to be special. Some of your comments here now. Hi, listening to you talking to Brendan Devaney and listening to him talk about the children coming here from war-torn country with such passion. It's so great to hear. Totally agree with Brendan that all world leaders have blood on their hands for trying to block these children from coming and standing by and doing nothing to stop this war and all the war crimes that are happening. That comes in from Nolene. Stop calling it a war. It's genocide, says a listener. Another, what about the holding of all the Gazan people and bombing innocent people? They've been suffering and still suffering at the hands of Israel. The media has a responsibility to report stories with balance. There are two sides in this and both are as bad as each other. 86% of Palestinians support Hamas, and that's wrong. The Hamas Charter's main objective is to eradicate Israel and all Jews. The entire world thinks Putin is a bad man and Ukraine is not good either. Ukraine killed 8,000 of its own people because they identified as Russian, says a listener there. We've discussed all of this in great detail. We're talking about a group of people trying to bring some kids over to some GEA events here and want to talk about how bad Hamas is. Hamas are not a very nice group of individuals, don't get me wrong, but there is about 14,000 Christians killed every year in Nigeria. Who's shouting out about them? Well, if you want to come on and discuss that and give me more information or indeed point us in the right direction, more than happy to do so. I think that Brendan's brilliant. Everything he says is right. Hostages that were taken were waving white flags and the Israeli soldiers shot them anyway. What more do you need to know? They just want to kill. And there was an IDF senior soldier, who's been speaking under the cloak of anonymity about being trained to shoot civilians, etc. I wish to congratulate Brendan Devaney on his strong opinions. He spoke very well. Well done for speaking out for the poor creatures getting slaughtered in Gaza. Quite an assumption to make that people not on the internet don't have an ideology. How do you think ideology spread before Facebook and Twitter, Greg? Everyone has an ideology. Everyone has a set of beliefs and biases. This enlightened centrism thing doesn't actually exist. All that is fence-sitting in an attempt to appear neutral when all you are is pro-status quo. I don't agree. I'm not saying, by the way, I mean, you talk about ideologies. It's the strength of that. I mean, people have their sensibilities and what they believe is right or what is wrong, but they don't necessarily align themselves to a whole plethora of thinking. And on it goes. Loads of comments in relation to that. We'll get to them, of course, as this hour progresses, but we're joined in the studio now by Mairead Ní Uaoine, lead singer and fiddler with Elton. Good morning to you. How are
Good
you
morning.
Keeping? Great
Hello,
to have
Greg.
You with us.
It's
are we all tuned up, ready to
we
go?
We are tuned up. And this is Kieran Corran here, my bouzouki player.
Bouzouki. Talk to me about the bouzouki. I don't care if it makes a noise. It looks absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
I know it does make a noise. I've heard you on it before, but yeah, it's a beautiful instrument, isn't it?
Yeah, this one was made by a guy in Northumberland called Stephen Sobel.
What's the heritage of that, not that particular instrument, but the bouzouki?
Well, the bouzouki was, you know, it's based on the Greek instrument and it was introduced into Irish music around the end of the 60s, I think, by Johnny Moynihan gets the credit for bringing it in, and it seems to have worked really well with, you know, with Irish music.
And its shape there, what does that lend itself to, say, compared to what people might be, you know, a traditional guitar shape, for an example?
Well, it's more like a kind of a bass mandolin type of sound. But this is like what they call the Irish bouzouki. It's got a flat back.
Okay.
Whereas the Greek bouzouki has a different sound.
Is that Savarbelli's?
Yeah.
That's it. Because I'm thinking, if it had a round back, I am playing with it.
this one's adapted for Irish people.
Okay, right, very good. And you can play it one-handed in case you want to drink. Is that enough? I'm walking into every stereotype there. My apologies. Marine, I'll come to you in a moment.
Not just, at all.
It's just the string setup here, right? So to my non-musician eye, it looks like four sets of two strings.
Yeah, it's like a mandolin. It's like part of that family, the mandolin family. You know, you have mandolin, mandola, mandocellos, and they're all like eight strings. Mm.
And do you play those strings individually, or do you play them as four pairs?
No, you hit them like, you know. Yeah. It gives a kind of a ring, probably, that you don't get from a single string, you know.
Yeah.
You get a...
It's a lovely sound, isn't it, Marae? And it works so well with your beautiful instrument.
Oh, the fiddle.
How long have you had that one?
Oh, well, I have this one now about 20 years, but, you know, fiddles are just like, they become an extension of yourself.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because you hear these horror stories sometimes of a fiddle being lost in an aeroplane or something along those lines, and it does, you do get that.
You did help me with this fiddle when it was broken to smithereens.
Right.
And Fitz down here in Letterkenny put it all together, lovingly put it all together, and it sounds better than what it was beforehand.
And I suppose in a way, because it's more to its story, it makes it a little bit more special as well.
Oh, well, I mean, when I saw it in bits in the airport after it fell out of the case, it just went, I thought I lost a limb, you know. And then I sent it to a fiddle maker in Shetland, whom I thought would be, and he said, throw it into the bin. But I was speaking to Fitz down here in Letterkenny, and he says, sure, bring it out till I see it. And it only took him a few months, and next thing I get the fiddle back.
Just
better,
a couple of months.
Better, but better than
He's
ever.
He's sitting at home going, what? Just a few months? I've bossed me back on that thing.
But listen, the whole thing is... I didn't expect him to be able to do anything because it was in such tiny pieces.
But isn't it amazing? And I think this sounds so silly to say, but, you know, when you watch programmes like The Repair Shop, right?
Yeah.
It gives us an idea of how talented some people can be, that he can see what's there and go, no, I can actually return this to... You know,
yes, and you wouldn't think that
can,
was...
What we can do is amazing.
You wouldn't think that was in bits.
Not at all. And it's not lost any of its... it's not lost any of its sort of character.
No. Yeah. It's actually improved at whatever he did. He's amazing.
So when people say out loud, 40 years of Alton...
Yeah. What? It's hard to believe, Kieran. Honest to God.
Because we're here and you both look fantastic and young and healthy. Do you
know what I mean? Specsavers.
No, but you know, it's hard to believe that's 40 years of experience, memories, crowds, makeups.
It was you reminded me. We didn't even think about it on New Year's Eve or anything. And
it was the June bank holiday weekend in 1985, and we were heading to Lustall, and everybody else was heading to Bruce Springsteen, and he was playing Slane that year.
The same weekend.
Wow. The same weekend, and that was our first actual gig.
And I think when you mark an anniversary like this, it's as much for the fans and the supporters that have been there from the beginning or you've picked up along the way, as much as it is actually for the collective.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, it's lovely for you to recognise it, but it marks it for your fans.
Yeah, well, it's good for us to mark it, really, because and then it gives us... Gosh, we've made it so far, and we're happy, and we're stronger than ever, and we're working very hard. You know, we don't play a lot in the country, but we play a lot of music. Mm. Mm-hmm. And it's great, actually, that this weekend we're going back to the source, which is Donegal. We're going to Early's Bar tomorrow night in Arranmore Island, to Gerry Early's bar.
And just to answer that question, by the way, yes, indeed, there is a late ferry being provided, because that's the first thing I thought. I want to do that, but how do I get home? So the thought of everything, there is a late ferry.
Yes, and we just thought, I got so many songs from Rosh and the Nuirin, like there's a huge festival now in her name, but a lot of our albums were based on her songs. And then when I was in there... At the first festival, Johnny Duffy, the great Dr. Johnny Duffy, said, "You're welcome home," he said, because apparently all the Moonies, when they came to Donegal, we were boat builders, and we actually lived on Ardmore Island, so I was going back to source there. And
yeah, because I was going to ask, and you've kind of answered the question, when, you know, like the potential for shows that you could do are endless, right? Yeah. But, you know, Early's Bar, beautiful venue. It's an intimate venue too, though, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's very intimate, but that was what we wanted. We did,
yeah, that's what, like, I was going to ask,
You can go big, and we will be doing, like, we're doing the Mandela Hall and the Guild Hall later on. In the
what year. Are these more for you?
For this
what
is for us.
To do. Yeah.
And for us with the people. And, you know, our music is the music of the people. Like, traditional music is a folk music. It's music of the people. And, you know, we love just... you know, communicating and seeing the people and maybe having them on stage with us as well.
And there's also, on Sunday the 13th, it's going to be a busy weekend, the concert of the greats at the Marquee in Brooklyn as
well. Oh, yes, Eamon Gillespie's idea, and fantastic. We're really looking forward to that, going to Brooklyn and playing in a huge marquee, and hopefully the sun will be shining. And
Well, this is the one thing we're guaranteed now, weather.
Yes.
Yeah, we know that. Sunday, there's not much rain provided.
Yes.
Maybe the odd... The odd clap of thunder, but you can just tie that in.
We just play, and we'll just watch the match, and as we win,
fingers crossed,
we'll all win.
Kieran, when you reflect on your 40 years, I'm not going to ask what the highlight or the low light is, because sometimes I think, certainly with me, I can't do that with honesty, because things blend into sort of one thing in a nice way, if you know what I mean. But if you reflect on 40 years in a paragraph.
Yeah, well, I suppose you sort of think of some of the bigger, really big things that you did. Like, we did the Hollywood Bowl on two occasions, yes, I think it was.
Amazing.
And, like, that was incredible to be doing something like that.
The Greek Theatre.
The Greek Theatre.
In LA.
And also sharing the stage with other world-renowned musicians as well, too.
Well,
trying to remember these things.
Yeah, it's Dolly.
Dolly
Parton, of course.
But that was the point I was trying to make. You're just like me, Kieran. I sort of can reflect in the round, and maybe one or two things will pop out, but I just know if it was amazing or, you know.
Yeah.
Do you ever wish you could sort of spring back in time and absorb things in a different way, Marae? Do you know what I mean? Take a bit more time to soak it in, or do you soak in every experience as it comes?
Well, you know, you have to be honest to where you are at the moment, and I think we did our best at that time, you know. We love to bring Donegal tunes. And what one of my special moments was, we were in somewhere in Palm Springs or somewhere in California, and we walked on stage and we started playing a few Donegal tunes, and someone shouted from the audience, "Long live Con Cassidy." And I just looked down, here we were in the middle of a desert and somebody knew about Con Cassidy of Teelin, you know. And it just gave me a great joy that we were bringing these great musicians that gave us their music so generously.
Yeah.
They were with us on that stage, you know. And I remember telling, Con was still alive, God rest him, and I told him about it. Who would know me over there, Marae? You know, that was great. It was fantastic, you know, to be able to bring the likes of my father even, or the Campbells, or the great John Doherty, and they're with you all the time. And all of these people, if they like our music, they'll delve deeper and they'll come here. And we notice a lot of younger musicians are, you know, finding Alpen, and then they say, well, where are they from and what's this music about? And next thing they arrive and they're learning, or they're enjoying the place, or they're learning Irish, or learning fiddles.
But we have that in this county, and I don't want to be over parochial and think we're better than everyone else, though I believe we
are. But we are.
Yeah, okay, good. but there is something about our great musicians, especially those that have enjoyed great international success, always so proud of Donegal, and I don't think it happens as much in other counties. You know, I'm thinking of the likes of the Henry Sisters and bringing people back here, or going out. Daniel O'Donnell in a different space,
lovely.
Right?
But great man.
It's just Donegal. It's everything's Donegal. And you guys, it's been part of you. It was never foregone for a different type of success. It's always been part of who you are. It's authentic.
Yes, well, it is authentic, and you know, there's no use in kind of going off with a big head, because what we're doing is playing music, and we love playing music, and we're so lucky to do so well. But I was talking to somebody in America the other day, and I said, if I took a radius of 10 miles around my house, you know, and talk about Enya and Moya Brennan and Clannad and Scarabray and Bothyban and Daniel O'Donnell and Margot, you're talking 100,000 albums.
Million albums.
Do you know
how many million albums? In terms of sales?
Yes.
Oh, millions.
Yeah, millions of albums.
Daniel's banging out millions on his own.
Yes, but that's what I'm saying, you know. And then there's loads of young musicians then, the Emma Nierishkas and the Owen Ferries. And
we've got so many.
Amazing.
I know you're mad to get playing, Kieran.
No, I'm not.
We've got so many amazing artists that just need the break. They're there, the talents there, the songwriting's there, the music's there.
It's
amazing.
I was listening to George Houston the other day.
I think he's starting to break through.
Oh, he's incredible.
But we've got others that are just, the package is there. We just need them to...
Everything, you know, every genre.
But the one thing that seems to be the common denominator, and maybe young musicians can look on, and I'm not saying it's not there at all, though, is humble... Remembering where you're from, staying true to yourself, that seems to be a key part of getting out of Donegal and being successful, I think.
Yeah, I think people are very grounded here. Yeah. And if you're not grounded, the corners will be soon taken off you.
But there is a lot of luck involved in it too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can be very talented and great musician, and if you don't get that bit of luck to get there, that's it.
We were very lucky.
Yeah. But you were there, as I say, the package ready to go as well too. So you have to be ready for it.
Young and enthusiastic.
Yeah.
Now we're old and enthusiastic.
That's what I was going to say, because Kieran, the enthusiasm isn't gone, because you know, you're creating all of the time, looking for new things.
Yeah.
Not even just musically, but you know, in the gigs that you do or where you go.
We
enjoy it, you know, and when it stops being enjoyable, that's when to stop. But you know, the thing with music is music kind of is like life itself. Like, it's like water and air. You need it, and you need to be able to play it every day.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I play away to my cat at home. The cat hears
everything. Well, we've seen your cat on many occasions. I mean, when you're on Zoom, I'm normally expecting it to hop up over your shoulder right now, but I was waiting for the cat to get a mention.
I know.
All right, brilliant stuff. Shall we hear a little music? I mean, the capacity at Early's Bar is as big and beautiful as it is. It's not infinite,
it's not that
right?
Big.
So if you want to go, you have to contact the ferry provider yourselves to book your ticket to make sure you get home. But I'm telling you one thing, in terms of an experience, to ferry over to beautiful Aranmore Island, make your way up the hill to Early's Bar, sit in there, listen to proper world-class music, and then your treat is a tumble down the lane and out the ferry again. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. And then Brookless again, another offering. It has slightly more capacity, but you need to get on that as well. That's Sunday night, a concert of the greats at the Marquee in Brookless.
Yes.
Right, okay, so what are we going to listen to, Marie? Well,
we're just going to play a few reels that I suppose we... One of the first reels that we recorded many years ago with my husband, Frankie Kennedy, here and played with us. So we haven't played these in ages, but I hope you've enjoyed them.
What a treat, whenever you're ready. You come all the way over to Letterkenny for that? More! Yeah. I'm only messing. What a lovely, lovely piece
Thank
of
you.
Music. And what an opportunity to see Alton. As I mentioned, Early's Bar, Aaron Moore, on Friday, the 11th of July. Is that today? No, that's tomorrow. Tomorrow. Sorry, I've got my days a little bit mixed up. There is a late ferry back as well, so no excuses. What a beautiful setting in beautiful weather. And then on Sunday night, equally wonderful venue. It's a marquee in beautiful Brooklands, the Concerts of Greats. Great to see something being organised for Brooklands, actually.
Yes,
it's
well.
A beautiful part of the world.
Can I also mention to Tranona that my daughter and I are going to be playing next Tuesday in the Dunluce Centre.
Fantastic.
So my Nia and myself and Manus Loney are going to play there next Tuesday night. So I forgot about that.
Kieran Curran on Bouzouki, thanks for the chats. Thanks for the brilliant music. It's been lovely having you in.
Thanks.
And Mairéadh Weeny, we always love having you on the show. Thank you so very, very much. We'll be back with more after the break. Paul McLaughlin from Ballacdur Garden Centre is in with us. Paul, where else would you be? Brief chat there about holidays before I put the mics up. But where else would you be in weather like this except beautiful County Donegal, the northwest of Ireland?
Absolutely. Hard to beat now, so it is. My job, I travel around a lot, so we get to see every aspect of it,
yes.
So it really is, you're spoiled.
What's your favourite part? I think I've asked you this before, did you say
yes.
Glenveagh?
I love Glenveagh. I like down sort of down the west too, like even down the area around Maharorty on around Bloody Foreland there is lovely.
So stunning stuff. Wherever you go, it's just beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, there's something different in all corners.
Yeah, be it just the landscape or the architecture for that matter. Right, so last time you were in, I mean, I didn't mind the weather. There was a spell of bad wet weather, but it was all right. What did it mean for our gardens? I've learned now that we need our flowers to be their best need sunlight, and we haven't had a ton of that.
No, funny. I'd say the flowers are a wee bit behind because it just hasn't been that much sunshine, and there's been a lot of breezes there. It's been quite sore on them, especially hanging baskets that are drying out a lot, if you know what I mean. But other plants are getting maybe too much water, so at least they're well hydrated now. So if the good weather does come, they're not. Prime spot to jump, if you know what I mean.
And really a lot of our conversations since this new season started is about getting, if you're lucky enough to have, you know, your hedges, your lawns and everything, they should be looking their best now, really, shouldn't they?
Yes.
That's what we've been building up to. That's when you talk about raking leaves and stuff like that there.
Yeah.
It's to ensure they look as good as possible now for the good weather.
Exactly. All your sort of winter and spring preparation is far now. So hopefully if we get the good weather, actually you'll have a real lovely garden to sit out and enjoy.
Yeah.
Pretty much, because that's what it's all about, is actually sitting out and enjoying it.
Blocking the wind, that's critical.
Yes.
You know.
Right,
the wind can just clean you even on the hottest of days.
Pretty much, I can make it fairly unpleasant. But no, in fairness, it's not been too bad recently, so it has.
Yeah.
So just you have to learn to embrace it, I suppose.
We're in the dog days. What's this about?
Yes, the dog days are...
I've heard the song, The Dog Days of Summer. I didn't realise it was actually,
No, it's a thing, all right. Dog days is the period sort of from early July to early August. Cirrus, which is the dog star, rises and sets with the sun, and sort of ancient peoples believed that really intensified the heat of the sun. Pretty much like now at the minute it's very warm out, so whether it's anything to do with the stars, that I don't know. But they always believed that sort of, yeah, this period of sort of May, June, where plants were really springing forward and everything was just bursting with life. And now it sort of takes a break, almost the development sort of slows a wee bit. So people associated that with the stars' appearance, and thought that it was just too hot for plants to thrive, pretty much. So with that, they always avoided planting seeds and stuff now because they reckon the germination rates wouldn't be in this period.
And we know
wouldn't
probably
be as good.
Wouldn't be.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if they just looked at facts and then aligned a theory.
I suppose they just used nature to explain what was going on in their daily lives, if you know what I mean.
All right, potato blight. A lot of people are sort of digging now or have them out or will be shortly.
Yeah.
So is blight still as big an issue?
Blight, sort of for your main crop, potatoes still be in the ground, so blight can be an issue, right? So it can. So it's just that sort of warm, muggy weather is always worth watching out for. It.
Damp. People know humid, muggy, kind of the air feels a bit wet.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's just prime for blight spreading.
And it's fungus attack effectively.
Yes, exactly.
Do people treat the spuds ongoing, or do you start treating them once you get the blight warning, or what's the story?
No, generally people sort of professional farmers would be treating sort of from the start of June on.
I do sometimes forget that it's a professional industry.
Yeah, but in terms of people in the garden, a lot of people would probably if they want to reduce the amount they're spraying, they would sort of wait for the first signs of it, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So they would, but it's generally, it's a good idea to keep sort of, keep an eye and keep a good regime going on.
Yeah. Your tomatoes, if you're growing them, they're getting hungry now.
They are, right. Funny, my tomatoes would actually be, they'd be further behind where I would hope they would be.
Okay.
But it's just, I think.
In terms of size, colour,
Just in terms of size of the plants and stuff, you know, yeah. And they're just sort of lacking vitality, if you know what I mean. Mm. But
you're growing them in a tunnel, aren't you?
Yeah.
So what would you put that down to? Because would they be as vulnerable to the lack of sunlight, even though they're in a tunnel?
Pretty much. I was thinking actually that it's the lack of sunlight is the problem,
right? Okay.
If you know what I mean. Yeah, but yeah. Probably a bit of feeding now. Hopefully they will jump on.
Yeah. Okay. Right now, water.
Mm-hmm.
Water is an issue. As Ishka Aaron were out on about it yesterday, Milford. I can't see that whole pipe ban being lifted anytime soon.
No,
to be
I can't.
With you,
because, definitely not. Because I see it only getting worse rather than better. Yeah, if you know
and the bottom line is there's been a lot of development in Milford, and there isn't the water for it.
Yes,
and we're not going to get the rain to fill up that lake. So I don't know what they're going to do there. But I can't see that whole pipe ban lifting anytime soon. And there are a number of other areas. I'm thinking Buncrana, Downings, Letterkenny and elsewhere. I'll get the email up whereby people are being asked to preserve water. So I think we're going to see more of this, not less.
Yes, I'd say if the weather, like we're supposed to be looking into a heat wave for the next couple of weeks, so if that does transpire, obviously there's going to be more pressure in the water system. So there are a few sort of basic water saving steps you can take yourself to actually help reduce your use, which would include sort of saving whatever water's going at the minute, like if you have water butts associated with your downpipes or whatever.
And do you like big butts?
Oh well, like all sizes really.
Okay.
All right. But so generally stuff like that there.
I'm just wondering if the water lies in it too long.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is
there any honey? No, absolutely not. Actually, they reckon water. Sort of the water lying there actually would sort of improve it almost. Absolutely not. But no, the thing about it is, they reckon, a lot of people would reckon sort of salvage water would be better for plants than the sort of tap water would be.
Yeah, of course, because it's not been treated.
Yes, exactly.
So Ishka Aaron is appealing for customers in Donegal to be mindful of the water use. So there are several areas across the county now, including Buncrana, Carrigart Downings. Now, say for instance the likes of Carrigart Downings, the tourists are only arriving now, so
that's exactly, there'll be extra pressure.
That's going to be a problem, or less pressure. Milford, of course, as we know, the Twin Towns, Ballybofey, Stranorlar, and Letterkenny, they're already experiencing increased demand. So I just would wonder if we're going to start seeing hosepipe bans in those areas in the not too distant future.
I would say quite possibly, you know, because it doesn't take much to tip the system over the edge, really.
Right, okay. Let me see. I think we have to get some questions now. Greg, found a wasp nest under eaves of a rented house. How do we remove them?
How do you remove them? I suppose if you're in any doubt or if there's any danger posed by it, I would say seek professional help. Maybe there are extermination companies there. If you want to tackle it yourself, there are a number of products you can buy, sort of like basically hardware shops, farm-related shops there. And a lot of them you can sort of spray the chemical from at least 10 feet. So you can actually be a safe distance back from the wasps.
Because they will be angry.
Absolutely. No, generally I would go out and give it a spray, if that's what you're thinking of doing. Sort of retreat for a while, let it do its work, and then maybe come out and do it again. But
and it's different, like maybe honeybees or whatever. There's not really, I mean, these are...
Yes. No, wasps definitely would pose a danger if there are people near hand. So, like, where obviously you would try and preserve the bees, I would be, if it posed any danger, I'd be getting rid of the wasps.
Can you ask about this, please? I have a section of garden that's all wee stones, and I've had a wild bad weed growth through all the stones. What's the best way to deal with it? I don't want to throw weed killers about willy-nilly, as the stones are next to the main garden grass. Now, this is a pain.
Yes.
And I thought I was being clever. I put a bit of stones out the back of the house and I put a tarpaulin, not a tarpaulin, but the
weed fabric.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They grow anyway. They just grow. I mean, they might be slightly easier to lift.
Yes.
But, and weed killers crap.
A lot of weed
by
killers
the time,
are.
By the time you get the results you want from weed killer, the new weeds are coming through.
Yeah.
You know, you just have brown weeds for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, pretty much. So as case to get there, if the mat's there, but like you say, the weeds are a wee bit easier to lift.
They have a mat. I have a mat and it's still a pain. Yes. I've given up really, actually.
Right. Pretty much, you can make the organic weed killer out of vinegar, which has fairly instant results, but it doesn't kill off the roots, so you have to do it quite often, if you know what I mean. But if you look up on the internet, you get a recipe for making your own sort of classes organic weed killer.
All right, okay. Is it okay to prune shrubs at this time of year?
Prune shrubs this time of year? As a rule, generally, yes. Normally, as a rule of thumb, if you're pruning shrubs, after they finish flowering, basically, because if you cut them earlier, you're in danger of cutting the flowers off them or any potential flowers off them. So in a case they got there, I would say you're not going to do any harm pruning them at this time of year, but just careful if they haven't flowered yet, you'll possibly lose the flowers for this year.
Rose bushes planted beside a Lelandi hedge, not doing well, gets watered frequently. Any advice?
Yes, funny, apart from mentioning the water would have been my first concern there, in terms of the big Lelandis are almost bullying the roses, in terms of if they're established, they're going to be taking all the water, and if the person's watering them are obviously replacing that water, but I would say the Lelandis are also stealing the nutrients out of the soil. So it could be a case of maybe giving a wee extra feed.
Okay.
Come along.
Listen, Paul, it's been lovely having you in as usual.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for all the advice. Any questions we didn't get to, we'll carry them over. It's not going to be too long before we see you again. But for this Thursday, Paul, have a great day.
Thank you,
Greg. All right, take care. Now, we've had a series of releases over the last number of days, which all point in the same direction. Cancer delays are causing avoidable deaths. It's the stark warning, this time from the Irish Cancer Society, as it highlights new data showing delays in cancer tests and treatment across Ireland. And the Society is calling for increased investment in Budget 2026 in cancer staff, buildings and equipment to ensure target waiting times are met. I'm joined on the programme now by Amy Rosehart, Head of Advocacy with the Irish Cancer Society. And as opposed to Amy Rose, inevitably, as a Donegal woman, you look on and are going to keep a particular eye potentially on Letterkenny University Hospital, at least in a private capacity. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners. That's correct. This week, the Irish Cancer Society, we issued fresh data that we've obtained, which is looking at wait times for cancer tests and vital cancer treatment all across the country. And what we're seeing is a very, very mixed bag, and certainly a postcode lottery wherein where you live determines the speed with which you can access treatment. As many of your listeners already know, early treatment dramatically reduces your risk of dying from cancer. So that's why the National Cancer Strategy sets target times for cancer tests and treatment in the first place. But what we have seen this week is quite alarming and quite shocking in terms of the variance in compliance rates when it comes to KPIs, which are the target wait times set out for cancer tests and treatments. And also very alarming the manner in which urgent, say, referrals to a symptomatic breast disease clinic aren't being met either. So we're seeing a kind of a failure to meet target times. And also a postcode lottery. What I would like to say just at the outset here, Greg, is this isn't about individual hospitals. The Cancer Society is very clear that this is about systemic investment issues and a failure to adequately invest in the National Cancer Strategy in the last
eight
budgets.
I get you, and I'd love to get to that, but I do understand exactly where you're coming from. But unfortunately, if you say, take Letterkenny University Hospital, for an example, it was a long, long battle to get a second breast surgeon and to get that approved. And thankfully, just as the Minister for Health was arriving, it happened the day before that. You know, so in terms of budgets and allocations of consultants to sort of deliver timely treatments, you know, it is, we are here, obviously the society is different, but we here have to focus on it almost by a hospital by hospital basis, because it's so directly affecting the people of Donegal.
Yeah, and the data that we've issued this week very much highlights what is happening in Letterkenny General Hospital, and I can step you through that. If we first of all look at wait times for chemotherapy, and to be specific, this data that we obtain relates to the period between March 2024 and February of this year. The target wait time is 15 working days from when your clinician would prescribe chemotherapy. And the target is that 90% of people should be seen with that in that wait time. Only 20% of people during the time period we're looking at within Letterkenny were seen, which means that only one in five people who've been prescribed chemotherapy are being seen within that recommended 15 working days. It's very concerning. I personally raised it when myself and the CEO of the Cancer Society met with the Health Minister a couple of months ago, but we were reassured, and we have seen it in other data that the journal.ie released last weekend, that that particular KPI has improved quite dramatically in March and April of this year for Letterkenny. It's gone to 89% in March and 82% in April. However, it does indicate as it relates to last year, that, you know, the necessity for investment in cancer staff. There's wonderful staff there, but if there isn't a sustainable model, if someone goes on sick leave or if someone is out due to family leave, say you have four people on a team, Greg, one person is out ill, you're down to 75% capacity, mm-hmm. in comparison to say somewhere like Beaumont Hospital, where there may be 20 people on a team, one person is out sick and you're only down 5% capacity.
Yeah, so and I think
capacity is key.
Yeah, and I think what you were going to say, and sorry to interrupt you, we didn't just arrive at this today. It's been an issue of investment in this area over numerous budgets, Amy Rose.
That's correct. And the Irish Cancer Society, we launched our latest pre-budget submission just last week. We're calling on the government again this year to invest a minimum of 20 million funding in the National Cancer Strategy in order that it can be fully implemented and target wait times like those that we're seeing being missed, unfortunately, in Letterkenny can be met. There have been only three budgets within the last eight where the cancer strategy has received funding, including last year. In our view, that's just not enough. You know, Ireland already has the third highest rate of cancer mortality in Western Europe. Mm. And the Cancer Society are saying repeatedly that by 2045, the rate of people in this country that are going to get cancer is going to double. So if the government don't step up and invest 20 million in strategies that they themselves have launched, things are going to continue to go backwards. Mm. So what we're calling really on politicians all across the country, the health minister, and government and opposition parties, is to make the case and to make decisions in the best interests of patients. Because what we're seeing from this data this week across the country, and definitely in Letterkenny, is that patients are paying the price for that lack of investment.
And
that
the cost
leads to poorer outcomes.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. The cost is high. It's poor outcomes or even death in some cases. And, you know, there's even an east-west disparity in terms of cancer survival rates. You know, I know you gave the national figure, but it's even worse in the west. What we need, Amy Rose, I think, is not to be firefighting specific issues in particular hospitals, be it mm-hmm. in maternity care or be it in cancer care or whatever, mm-hmm. but our focus is on cancer care. We need a proper strategy that's applied mm-hmm. and incredibly well funded. You can't keep telling us we're a rich country and then we have to sort of squabble over 20 mil in cancer care. There's a big discrepancy there between what we're being told the country is like versus how we're delivering the most basics of stuff here, Amy Rose.
That's correct. And look, bottom line, as I said already, early diagnosis and early treatment dramatically reduces people's risk of dying from cancer. We are very, very clear in the Irish Cancer Society. We've had backing for this pre-budget submission from everyone, from the Irish Society of Radiation Oncology to the Irish Society of Medical Oncology. We have huge clinical backing here. We really, really want to see investment in staffing and in physical infrastructure, things like oncology day wards, things like theatre spaces, and also equipment. You know, as it relates to Letterkenny, there's wonderful staff that work there in that unit, but sufficient staffing is key so that you're avoiding disruption to patients when someone has to go off or out on leave. And I think it's every strategy is great. There's this strategy runs until 2026, and then there needs to be a new one. But the strategy is only worth the paper it's written on if it doesn't get adequate funding. We've been making the case to the health minister and everyone down that we need 20 million funding at a minimum in order that these target wait times and other things provided for within the strategy are delivered. So that's really what we're looking for. And also to bring in what we call the multi-annual funding model, that we shouldn't, and patients shouldn't, nor politicians shouldn't have to be making the case for investment year in, year out, because it's not predictable, it's not sustainable. It's very difficult for cancer services to plan and prioritise their resources. There should be a multi-annual funding model introduced. If I can say as well, if there are patients out there, Greg, who are experiencing delays, the Cancer Society would love to hear from you, because we, you know, it helps our advocacy to be able to bring that to central government. If anybody's interested in sharing, we have a website, cancer.ie/yourstory. And we also honour newly, we just revamped our website this week. There's a huge amount of information there for people who may be experiencing a cancer journey, who have recently been diagnosed, who are in recovery. And we have our support line, 1800 200 700, which is free and confidential and staffed by nurses. So anybody out there who is experiencing symptoms, the Irish Cancer Society would urge you to see your GP as soon as you can get an appointment and consult our website and or support line. You're not alone in that journey.
Okay.
This week, we're highlighting delays and a worrying picture of a postcode lottery that's happening around the country, despite the best efforts of staff and clinicians. And we are calling for 20 million investment in this budget in order to help our cancer services and our staff meet the target times that have been set out, because too many people are waiting and cancer patients don't have time to wait, unfortunately.
No, indeed they don't. Amy Rose Hart, thank you very much. Very well spoken. I appreciate your time. Head of Advocacy with the Irish Cancer Society, and Rosina Toner is a cancer campaigner, survivor as well. And I suppose, Rosina, it's good to hear big organisations pushing these issues too, because for people like yourself, often it can feel like a lonely furrow to plough.
It's absolutely brilliant to hear from Amy Rose, and it's great to just have that backing as well, and they can see what's going on in the country, because yeah, sometimes you just feel like you're talking and nobody's listening.
Yeah, and so you've tried to talk, haven't you? You've tried to have meetings, and often you can be frustrated in that as well.
It's so frustrating. After the last protest, which was the end of April, so there was a meeting in the hospital, and then we met the health minister, and then Tony Canavan, I emailed him several times. He emailed me back, sent me documents, the Donegal HSE infrastructure update. There's nothing in there that says very much that they haven't said. There's an ambulatory care centre. It's a 5-year plan. They're developing a business case. They keep saying the same things over and over again. And they're all saying it now. Bernard Gloucester's saying it. Tony Canavan's saying it. They're all saying it, and nobody's doing anything about it. It's just so frustrating.
It is, and it's frustrating across the whole health service. Like the maternity story that's out today again, you know, it's more talk, more waffle that, yes, we recognise this, yes, we're going to do that. You could argue that that's what it feels like sometimes when we're talking about Letterkenny University Hospital. When we're talking about home care package, it's the same thing. Like the fundamentals of society where you care for those that need the help, and you use the billions that we have to help those people. Why aren't we doing it, Rosina? I find it so frustrating that why aren't we? And money has to be spent correctly, don't get me wrong, but why aren't we properly running and funding these services so that we're not constantly fighting these wildfires on a case-by-case basis? It's very frustrating and very tiresome for someone like you who's got your own battle that you've been at.
It's like everybody else is saying, up in Letterkenny, they really don't understand. They actually don't understand how far away it is. And they keep saying, every time they talk about cancer services in Letterkenny, they bring Galway into it. They still are not getting the fact that it's 5-hour drive, for a lot of people. Pádraig Tobin, the AIM2 representative, said, the other day, was it Monday in the Dáil, even in Galway, they have a 7 to 8 week waiting list. So we are not going to be prioritised down there. It is just so frustrating. And what the Irish Cancer Society now is saying, it is a postcode lottery, and it is depending on where you live, whether you are going to live or die. And they keep talking about, we're going to do the ambulatory care centre. I have no doubt that they are going to do it, but they're not going to do it it'll be 20 years. And they need to do it faster than that. They keep talking about developing a business case. I don't see why. There's no business case. We need it. It's not even up for discussion. It's needed. So yeah, I don't know what he's talking
about. Some of that language is like what we tell children when we want to put them off from something.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
like,
exactly what it feels like.
You know,
maybe
put your shoes on. We're going to be going in an hour or something, because putting the shoes on feels like this journey's begun. We're more clever now. We know the language. We know the spin. We know where we've been. We know where we're going. We can't have the wool pulled over our eyes. Every time we ask a question, you can't send the same 1,000 words in an ambulatory centre when we know ourselves that it's not. It's just on the very, very first steps of an incredibly long journey. We know from the medical professionals that, you know, the surgical hub is the solution. We know from you that you need more chairs for people to sit in to give them these drugs, you know, and yet we're arguing about moving stuff around within the hospital and it having to go up the chain and down the chain and left and right. Rosita, we know the crack. We can't be fooled.
No, and another thing I've seen on different, different social media posts about the HSE have said that they have added a few chairs to the day unit to help. They haven't. I was only in there last week. It's still the same. They can't add chairs because there's nowhere to put them. They don't have any room. So they keep saying, oh, we've done this, we've done that, to make it look like they're trying to help. They're not. They haven't done nothing. They're just saying it. And it's so frustrating that they're telling lies, basically.
Well, at least, you know,
in the hope that it'll, like,
well, at least now the thing is at least we can speak. We can, you know, we've got platforms, be it social media or this show. You know, we can rattle the cage to the point whereby the Taoiseach has to answer questions. You know what I mean? So we're not, I think we should be proud of ourselves that we are making waves, but that has to come with delivery as well. And that means people have to keep on it and the politicians have to keep on it.
Yeah, even what Padraig said this morning when you were chatting to him, like, everybody now is united in this and we have to keep pushing. We have to keep pushing. Like, I will back the doctors 100% with the surgical hub. But, like, I started this fight for cancer services and this is where my fight is. So I have to keep on pushing for the ambulatory care centre because that's where we're going to get an oncology, haematology day unit.
Yeah, I get you. No, we need that. I think that is, you know, everyone's on the same page. We need it. It sounds fantastic, but it's already been committed to. We know that it's very early days. And the problem without the surgical hub, the concern is that we could end up like Enniskillen and then all of a sudden the business model for the ambulatory centre doesn't make any sense. Rosina, thank you so much. And fair play to you for being such a strong advocate for others who don't have the voice. It's incredibly important what you're doing and I appreciate you sharing your views with us. Take care of yourself.
Hi, thanks a million for calling. Bye.
Bye. We'll see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock.